In season three, we reported from Detroit about its extensive police surveillance system, Project Greenlight. We met resident Myrtle Thompson Curtis, who told us what she thought of all the cameras around her city and whether they actually helped to reduce crime.
Okay, the placebo effect, you can take two pills. One is a real pill, one is a sugar pill. And because you're being told this is an aspirin, oh, I feel better.
She thinks the effect was mostly psychological.
Even though the placebo effect, it doesn't really mean instantaneously if something happened, the police would show up. So you're not really safer. You just feel safer.
We also met Robert Williams, the first known person to face wrongful arrest due to flawed analysis of facial recognition software.
I said, this is not me. I was like, I hope y'all don't think all black people look alike. And then he says, the computer says it's you.
Williams is now suing the Detroit police. And so are two other black men also arrested after facial recognition misidentified them. The overlap between policing, surveillance, and technology keeps growing across the country. In this update, reporter Sonia Paul takes us deeper into these issues as more cities jump on board with virtual policing.
Sir, we sat here for 2 hours and watched accolades. This is my 2 minutes of fame.
Despite some public protests, in September of 2020, the Detroit City Council voted in favor of renewing a contract with DataWorks Plus for facial recognition software. It's worth over $200,000 and is now in place through September 2022. Meanwhile, businesses, which have to opt into the program and pay for their on-site cameras, are still buying into the city's surveillance network. Since our last report, Detroit police said about 6 cameras were added per month to Project Greenlight over a 10-month period. So there are now over 4,200 cameras operating in an area that's about 140 square miles.
The million-dollar question everyone wants to know is that if a business joins Greenlight, does it reduce crime at that business?
So does it reduce crime?
So I'm going to give you the typical academic answer that so many people find unsatisfying, which is, it depends.
That's Giovanni Circo, an assistant professor at the University of New Haven, who's been researching Project Greenlight for a few years with colleagues at Michigan State University. The study is still under peer review, but it found a slight decrease in carjackings and increased reports of minor crime.
One of the things that we hypothesize in our study is that because you have more surveillance, you have increased police response to calls for service, including very minor calls for service. And these minor thefts that might have not been reported or detected in the past were now being increasingly reported to the police. And so in some ways, we can see that it's having an effect, but maybe instead of preventing crime, it's being better at detecting crime.
But the study found Project Greenlight had no impact on violent crime. And even though it's difficult to actually pull apart the reporting of crime from the incidence of crime, Circo says interest in this kind of approach to surveillance is growing.
Because the technology has become much cheaper, much easier to implement at this point in time.
Circo's right about this approach growing. As of September 10, 2021, there were at least 83 virtual policing programs attached to real-time crime centers in the U.S., with about a third of them emerging in the last year alone. A 2020 U.S. Department of Justice case study on Jackson, Mississippi, says the police department there is a, quote, model example of how to overcome the budgetary limitations of a police department when building crime analysis or technical capacities.
With a ribbon cutting and name reveal, the city of Jackson launches its real-time command center. Police Chief James Davis says he's traveled to different cities to see how crime is handled there. That's how he turned the department towards virtual policing.
Public records indicate Jackson first launched its real-time command center in 2019 and uses 96 city-operated cameras. Each camera is supposed to have a flashing light. Here's Jackson Mayor Chokwe Antar Lumumba in a 2019 news report.
Ultimately, we want to do something like called like blue light or red light, whatever stores. And these would be stores that there would be a light outside the store. And what that signals is that this is a store that is on the circuit with the city that the city can look into.
All those cameras with flashing lights feed into a central command center at the police department.
It looks like a space launch room where you have these cameras and these screens everywhere, and you know, it looks like something from the military.
That's former Jackson City Council member and former military police officer DeKeither Stamps talking over Zoom about Jackson, Mississippi's real-time command center. Stamps is now a representative in the state legislature. Back in October 2020, he was the only council member not to vote for a 45-day pilot program that would allow private home security cameras, on top of city-owned public cameras, to feed into the city's command center. Over 400 police departments already have camera registries in place for citizens and businesses to share their camera footage with police. The Jackson program would allow police to access a live stream of these cameras. Stamp says it didn't make sense economically, and he had other concerns.
You know, we're conceding too much of our privacy to the government with these types of actions.
He was also critical of the companies that provide the technology that makes this possible.
Are they selling the data? Are they using the data? Are they aggregating the data? You really don't know where this wormhole ends. Just so many unknowns that it's all behind the scenes. It's almost like the Wizard of Oz kind of thing, where you got like somebody in a chair doing all these things, but you don't really know what they're doing or what they're looking at or what they're using the technology for.
Brittany Bowman works with a nonprofit neighborhood group in South Jackson. She's also unclear what exactly is happening with Jackson's surveillance program.
There are officers that I've spoken with who have no recognition of even about the pilot program, how long it was supposed to be, if it's actually been effective or has it been ineffective. We have officers who don't even know. I saw an officer ask about, hey, you know, what's going on? And they had no knowledge and said, I'll have to find out and get back with you. And the ones that I did speak with, they did not get back with me.
I reached out to the Jackson Police Department and got an email back from spokesperson Sam Brown. He confirmed Jackson's virtual policing program includes two main components: a registry where police investigators can access saved footage during an investigation, and a video share to live stream footage to the police. He also said participation is voluntary and requires the, quote, express written consent of the camera owner. This program uses technology made by the company Fusus, which is based out of Georgia.
Welcome to Fusus, the industry's first cloud-based, rapidly deployable, real-time crime center. Fusus integrates all major...
This is a marketing video of Fusus' software. It's the technology that can provide police access to any private camera. According to its website, Fusus spent much of 2021 at law enforcement conferences. The website also says they have partnered with police departments in Rialto, California, Oaklawn, Illinois, Georgia Tech, Orlando, and Minneapolis. When I called Fusus to ask about these partnerships back in July, their representative, Sahil Merchant, didn't give any concrete answers about their government contracts or even how the technology works.
I think people should always be asking, when the public is afraid of crime, who is benefiting from that? Who is getting more money because people are afraid?
Matthew Griglia is a policy analyst researching surveillance and privacy legislation at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a nonprofit digital rights group.
Because as we've seen from this tech industry boom around policing and surveillance, crime and fear are very profitable things.
He's also a historian of policing and has been tracking how law enforcement works with private companies like Fusus. He says this opaque process is typical.
All this, I think, is part of the strategy of attempting to go under the radar as Fusus has done with this piece of technology. It's hard to know even a lot of times how this technology works. A lot of times the governments they contract to also don't know how it works. But I think part of the important lesson here is that they don't really want us to know exactly how it works.
Despite her own doubts, Jackson resident Brittany Bowman believes the city's command center is a good thing. So are more cameras. She has come to think that this is a personal decision for everybody.
Everyone has to be their own guide or discerning factor to say, where do I not impede on someone's privacy, as well as how do I maintain a secure, safe environment for me and my family? So that's an individual preference.
But research shows that people's feeling of safety doesn't necessarily correlate with their actual safety. So how to balance that distinction, along with privacy and civil liberties, is a big question as cities like Jackson head further into virtual policing.
Thanks to Sonia Paul for that story.